Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Looky here, it's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. And we're going to have fun talking about things, as we always do, things that make a difference in your yard, in your garden, in your house. It's about living on the Gulf Coast. It's about all the challenges and all of the opportunities that we could be taking advantage of. Every now and then, we have to talk about this, and I won't apologize for it. I'll just go ahead and do it. We just have to talk about it. It's called the lawn. We have to talk about grass. And I can tell, even coming in this morning, Charlie's asking me, oh, look at here. It's time we talked about the lawn. But listen, here's I've got this radical, I have a radical concept for dealing with the lawn. And here's my view. If you don't, it is radical, I admit. I mean, it's crazy. You've probably never thought about it before. I know most of you have never even considered this. But it's pretty important. You need to enjoy your lawn. Now listen, I'm not talking about neighbor envy. I'm not talking about making your lawn some kind of status symbol. That's not enjoyment. It's the kind of thing that makes your back hurt because you're so full of attention because you want your lawn to be better than you. That's not enjoyment. I'm talking about this radical thing that you actually get out in the lawn. You actually spend time out there. You know, I'm talking about, you remember when we were kids, what was a lawn for? A lawn was for good. It was for playing football, man. It was for playing baseball, for playing catch. It was for wrestling. It was for, you know, all these wonderful things. Do you remember? Can you remember? This is going to be so strange to you. This is going to be so odd. But I can remember. The dim memory of it is a real interesting pleasure, however. I remember when people actually would take blankets, quilts out in the yard and lay on the quilts. Oh my goodness. They might even take some snacks out. They might even take a lunch out and eat on the quilts in the lawn. That's what I mean. You've got to have a lawn that you enjoy. And if you don't enjoy that lawn, then nothing else I'm going to tell you is going to make you happy about the lawn. And we can talk about, well, we'll talk about Charlie stickers. And we'll talk about, you know, we'll talk about the color of your lawn. We'll talk about what kind of grass to use. But, you know, the great centerpiece of having a lawn is that it's useful to you. Not as a status symbol. Not as a thing, oh, I got to have a lawn because my neighbors have a lawn. Not as something you have to mow, but as something you enjoy. Otherwise, there's no need in having a lawn at all. And we can talk about that. So let me just be clear, because we're going to have to talk about lawns a little bit more now. Because they're greening up. Everybody's going to be wondering, should I do this now? Should I do that? What should I do? Oh my goodness, I got to have a lawn. But the thing you need to write into this whole lawn prospectus, this whole lawn thing that you're going to have to be doing now, is spend some time in the lawn. Enjoy it. Listen, here's another good thing to do in the lawn. It's very good for you. It's very good for you. Take your shoes off. Take your shoes off. And walk through the lawn. Let the grass come up between your toes. Man. It's almost like a massage. It's an amazing thing. When was the last time you did that? There it is. So here's the thing. Why can't we enjoy the lawn? Because we're all trying to find happiness in having a lawn. But a lawn is not the thing in itself. A lawn is a tool to allow you to do the things you enjoy doing. It allows you to get from one place in the yard to another. You know what I'm saying? It's the place where you can stand in the center of it and you can look around and see all the beautiful flowers around you. But if you stand in the center of your lawn and all you can see is lawn, well, it ain't that much fun. It ain't that useful. I told you. It's radical. It's an incredibly radical idea. When was the last time you got in your lawn except to go to the car?
Can I share a thought?
Yeah.
One of my favorite memories in the yard, grandson, 1 year old, 1 year old. And I had the joy of babysitting him quite a bit during his first year for a variety of reasons. But one of my favorite things to do was to go take out this old blanket, put it on the grass, and me and him would go out there, and he had his little bottle, and I had my beverages and snacks like you talked about. And every now and then when I would be laying on my back, still imagining the shapes in the clouds, yeah, like we did when we were kids, he would crawl off the blanket and be out there in the grass. Never told his mom about all that. She probably would have panicked.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But
so
he loved it, and so did I.
Yeah, so here's that. There it is. That's what we used to do. That's what lawns were about. Now, you ask me, what do I do about these weeds?
It's an ocean of stickers, Bill. In 12 years, I have not had stickers.
We're going to come to that in just a minute.
But
other folks are asking me, what do we do about weeds? What do we do about fungus? So if I tell you, if I tell you about some herbicide, which probably won't work the way you want it to, and you take your kids out in the lawn and they play football there, and your grandson walks across the, what am I doing to you? What am I doing to your grandkids? I don't care what happens to you. You're too old. It doesn't matter anymore.
Thanks a lot.
Not you, Charlie, personally.
Okay.
All of you folks out there. But what about your children? What about we have made the lawn into something that is useless. Something that we can't use, something that we can't enjoy.
So chemical deposit.
The first, and even without the chemicals, we don't enjoy it anymore. So the first rule, coming up on this lawn season, you got to find a way to enjoy it. And if you're not enjoying it, you need to do something else. One of the things I will have to reiterate is that if you've got 3 acres of lawn, the only way to make that useful in an important way is it's because it ceased to be a lawn and it is now a pasture. And I got nothing against pastures. They're very useful. If you have a horse or a goat, they're very good for, you have choices when you have a pasture. You can have square bales. You can have round bales. You can have horses. You can have goats, but it ain't a lawn anymore. So be thinking carefully about that before you decide to make a 3-acre lawn, because I can't help you. I can help you with a pasture, but I can't help you with 3 acres of lawn because it ceases to be a lawn. Let's talk a little bit about lawns, but let's talk about some other things this morning too. There is lots to talk about. One of the interesting things we can talk about this morning, and I'm open to it, is allergies. A lot of people are suffering from them. Let's talk about what causes them. Let's talk about how to think about it, what to do about it, whether you can do anything about it. And, you know, there's some interesting things about allergies this time of year that we could talk about, because most of them are caused by trees and specific kinds of trees. And what kind of trees do you think those are? Let's talk about that a little bit this morning. Let's talk about your garden. I'll tell you what else I'm excited about is my citrus. My citrus are absolutely incredible. What a year for citrus this is going to be. It's going to be a great year for citrus. It's going to be a great year for bananas. Bananas are, I think there are going to be a lot of bananas out there. Let's talk a little bit about how you can make bananas in your own yard. It's now the time. There's a couple of stages to this, but we're going to talk a little bit about that this morning too. And we're going to talk about what there is left to plant. There's a lot of things left to plant. And I hope too that if you haven't got enough to plant, that you make it by the Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale this afternoon. It's the last day of that sale, 11 to 4 o'clock. Check it out. If there are any Hamlin oranges there left, oh, leave me one. Leave me one, please.
There is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land to which I go. I'm going home to see my mother. I'm going home no more to roam. I'm just going over Jordan. I'm just going over home. I know dark clouds will gather around me. I know my ways rough and steep.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, we're back. We're back. We're going to talk about things this morning. We're going to talk about things that'll be useful to you. We're going to come back to this lawn idea, this radical lawn idea that that you're supposed to enjoy the lawn, not as something you look at between your front door and the car door, but it's something that you actually use, participate in, touch, feel, smell. Enjoy the lawn. If you enjoy the lawn, you've solved most of your problems because you'll worry less about all the things that people tell you you need to worry about. So, you know, we got some problems. I don't want to overstate them because there's some problems. But so Charlie's got a problem with stickers in his lawn. Lots of them. And you know, that's an interesting problem, isn't it? Because it makes it hard to enjoy the lawn. But the reason we have stickers is because we don't enjoy the lawn. I'll tell you that. That is the absolute case, because what we've done is we have a model for how to mow a lawn that is based on golf courses. We've decided that every lawn should look like a golf course. Now, listen. If you're playing golf in your front lawn, if you've got a little flag and a little cup, little hole and a tee spot, you make it look like a golf course because that's your use and you're going to enjoy it. You're out in it. I'm okay with that. But you got to have a flag out there in your front yard. You got to have a little tee. You got to have a little tee, you know, a place where you tee off from. That's all okay. But if you don't have, if you're not using a putter or a driver, or a wedge in your front yard, if you don't have a sand trap there, if you don't have a water feature that you have to golf around, then why are you mowing it like a golf course? So let me tell you, if you've got stickers in your lawn, and there may be an exception to this, but I can tell you, I have said this so many times and I've looked at it so many times, I have never found an exception yet. If you have stickers in your lawn, it's very simple. You're mowing it too short. You're mowing it like it's a golf course and like it's a putting green. And those are very special grasses. They take a lot of herbicides and pesticides. They are useful only if you're going to putt, and they are a pain in the patootie. I could have made that rhyme, but I didn't. So listen. Don't mow your grass so short. And it's not what you do. I talked to Charlie about it. It's not what you're doing this year. That was an accumulation of what happened last year. Wasn't the weather. Wasn't anything else. It was just that the lawn was mowed too short. There was a seed source for these little stickers. I'll remember the name of them in just a minute. And they seed like crazy. And if those seeds can see the sunlight, they're going to germinate. If they don't see the sunlight, they're going to sit there. Then nothing's going to happen. They can't compete with grass that's mowed at the right height. So there's a simple thing to fix. And the reason we have the problem, you know, it's either because, you know, your grass is weak or because you're mowing it too short. So mow your grass a little high. You'll never have a sticker problem as long as the grass is healthy. As long as the grass is healthy and growing, you'll never have a sticker problem. And as long as that grass is more than about 2 inches tall, I would, you know, we can talk about the different types of grasses and how to deal with them and how to mow them. And that's all fine. So there it is. Let's enjoy the lawn. Now, I do want to talk about something else because Chris and I talk a lot about this, and I've been thinking about it a lot, and I'm open to discussion on this. I'm open to correction. I'm open to argument. I'm so ready for you to tell me I'm wrong, but just tell me why. Grass, you have a choice of three kinds of grasses. None of them will ever be perfect. Basically, there are three grasses you can choose from now. None of them will, they'll all have problems. And if you've got lots of shade, none of those are going to work there. You know, one of the problems with some of our grasses is that St. Augustine and Centipede, and I love St. Augustine. I think it's a fine grass. I think it's a beautiful grass. It's a great grass. But it's got its problems. It's going to have problems, inevitably, as all long grasses do. But St. Augustine and Centipede cannot stand up to a lot of use, a lot of traffic. So if you've got dogs, if you've got kids, if you're playing baseball, you got problems. The only way St. Augustine is going to stand up to a lot of traffic is you got to keep it as tall as possible. And then it does okay, but it's still not great. So and we say St. Augustine tolerates shade, but it doesn't tolerate a lot of shade. It really doesn't. It won't. It'll flicker out. So what are we doing? Let's talk about some of the alternatives to lawns, because if you've got 3 acres, man, it's never going to be beautiful. It's never going to be perfect if you're down there looking at every square inch of it. If you make it a pasture, think about what the goats are seeing. That's the only thing that matters in the pasture. But here's some other things to be thinking about. You can use shrubs in part of your yards if you're having problems with your lawn. It can work really well. We can talk about how to do that. If you've got a lot of shade, and this is where I want you to argue with me, because it's such an easy grass. You call it monkey grass. And it's a name for a lot of different kinds of plants. There's Liriope muscari, Liriope spicata. There's also mondo grass, which is Ophiopogon. You don't want to hear all those names. But we call them all monkey grass. And the ones that spread vigorously and that grow reasonably well, not the really wide-bladed ones, not the most ornamental ones, not the ones that grow the tallest, but the kind of the old, just what people have in their yards, they're really, really great for using for lawns. Now, Chris always corrects me, Chris Francis, my good friend. And he's right. He says, well, you get these brown tips when you mow it. You know what? I get brown tips when I mow my St. Augustine. But here's what happens. If you mow it at the right time, it's going to recover very quickly. You're going to get the new blades coming up. You won't even see those brown tips. They'll disappear. It's a very easy grass to grow. It's not even a grass. It's actually a lily, but it actually handles very well. It stands up to traffic. Great one. Just by the way, Glenn, you know, I think it's also a great time to talk about citrus. I'm listening.
Hey, Bill, I just two quick questions.
Yes, sir.
One, do you think it's a good time to plant brand new citrus trees right now?
Yes, sir. It's
like today?
It's a perfect time. Today is the day. There may be no better time. It is, you know, I like to plant the citrus when we're free of any remaining hard freezes. I don't think a hard freeze is going to happen at this point. And we want to give it as much time as possible to grow before the next winter gets here. So today is a great day. If you could, you know, you're going to have to, because you're planting in spring, you're going to have to be careful to water it come May. That's when you want to watch for it. Give it a good bit of water in April and May. Not all at once. It just needs about a couple of gallons every week, but make sure that every bit of that gets to the roots, and make sure it gets some of that water every week in May, and you'll be fine. May and June.
I got you.
Those are going to be the critical times. Yeah.
My other question is I'm looking to I bought a river birch tree for my front. I have one area in my front yard. I'm trying to plant a nice ornamental tree, but it's just pitiful. And I'm going to have to dig it up, and I'm going to replant something.
Tell me why you.
What about a Japanese magnolia, or what would you recommend to provide some shade but not an overly large tree?
Yeah, so Japanese magnolias are fine trees. They're really beautiful. There's a lot of great ones out there. They're harder to find. Mobile Botanical Gardens will probably have some left today. I know they had some really great ones there. I love Japanese magnolias, and I think they're wonderful, and that's a good choice. You know, I could give you 15 or 20 other trees, but there's nothing wrong with a Japanese magnolia, and you got it in your head, and I don't want to distract you, because I can't think of any good reason not to plant a Japanese magnolia there. Let me ask you why the river birch caused you problems.
I bought it from the botanical gardens,
yeah,
and it was a sad-looking tree when I got it. And it was just really small, and and it's growing, but it's just so small and pitiful-looking. It's going to take forever to actually develop into what resembles a tree.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to relocate it, but I want something that I can put right now that's going to look a little bit better in my front area of my yard.
Yeah, so let me tell you real quickly. The river birch have problems as they mature. I don't recommend river birch for us because of the leaf issues and because of aphids and other things that can make them look a little ratty and they don't live a long time. But right. The Japanese magnolia is a good choice. Listen, here's the key to getting things to grow, though. And this would have been true for the river birch. It's certainly true for the Japanese magnolia. Remove that grass as far around that.
Right. Right. I did do that. I've listened to your advice on that.
Yeah,
so
good.
That has been done.
It's good, good. So good. Put that Japanese magnolia in there. It'll be great.
All right.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's cool. We're going to be talking a little bit more about these things. We're going to people have bought things at the plant sale. There's still things to buy there, but we're going to talk about what to do and how to plant them. Somebody's got a pawpaw. We're going to come back and talk about that here in just a minute. If it keeps on rain, Levy's gonna break. When the levee breaks, I'll have no place to stay. Me no levee taught me to weep and moan. Me no levee taught me to weep and moan. God, what it takes to make a monkey man leave his home.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yes, while I'm hearing there's lots of sniveling going on, lots of allergies going on. My mother's talking about her allergies. My friends are talking about their allergies. They're out there. If you want to know why, what's giving you these allergies? You know, it's a funny story. It's a very funny story. Mobile and Spring Hill in particular, and Fairhope, cities where people are, communities where people are suffering from lots of allergy attacks right now, Spring Hill and Fairhope, Citronelle, where I'm sure lots of people are suffering from allergies. If you're from Citronelle and you're suffering from allergies, let me know. Listen, here's the funny part. These communities developed because they were nearly allergy-free. People came to Fairhope and to Spring Hill and to Citronelle. Citronelle actually advertised. It actually promoted the idea that you could, that it was the place to breathe. It was the place with people who had respiratory problems like allergies where they could come to breathe and be free of those problems. What in the world happened? Well, we don't understand some things about allergies, but let me tell you, here's a simple story. I'll start it here. The reason you have allergies right now, there is one primary, big, overwhelming reason that you have allergies right now, that you feel, if you have allergies, why you're feeling miserable. And there's one big reason for it, and it's called oak trees. I'm talking about live oaks. I'm talking about water oaks. But, you know, the live oaks right now, they're probably at their peak. And because we have so many live oaks and we've decided that's why you have allergies. It's that simple. If you want to, if you don't believe me, go look at, I was looking at a house in the neighborhood that had a somewhat light colored roof. And there was a live oak that was growing over that roof. And boom. It was absolutely covered in pollen. You could actually see the line of pollen dripping from the branch tips. It made this beautiful little, you know, you can't call it yellow. Pine pollen is kind of this ugly yellow-green line right there underneath the roof. That's what's causing it. A lot of people, for whatever reason, decided it was pine trees that caused their allergies. Well, here's the funny part. The reason people moved to Citronelle, and in fact, we have historic records, we have the advertisements, we now have the science to understand a little better. People moved to places like Citronelle and to Fairhope and to Mobile and to Spring Hill in particular because they were dominated by longleaf pines. And pines were hypoallergenic, particularly longleaf. Maybe loblolly's less so. But definitely longleaf pines were hypoallergenic. That means hypo, not hyper, but hypo. That means they were very, almost no one suffered from allergies because of the pine pollen. There's a lot of good reasons for that. It has to do with the way the pine pollen is made. It has to do with the grain size. It has to do with the fact that longleaf pine pollen doesn't spread very far. And that has a lot to do with the ecosystem of longleaf. So the pine pollen fell straight down. You'd have to lay down with your nose turned up straight up in the air to get pine pollen up, particularly from longleaf, up your nose. Whereas the live oak pollen is really hard to see. It drifts around in the air for long. The oak pollen, it just drifts for long, and it gets right up your nose. Boom, there it is. Of course, the irony is we have been steadily cutting down pines for a long time to get rid of our allergies and planting oaks because we think they're golden, and the oaks are the things that are giving us allergies. Now, let me say, I like oak trees. I love oak trees. In fact, you know, I can tell you more about oak trees than you want to know. There's some important stuff out there. I love live oak trees. I think they're great. I think we're going to lose them all because I think we're overplanting them, but I love them. I hope that we get smart about it someday and realize there are 40 other species of oaks that we can be planting. And hundreds, literally, of other types of trees in Mobile that would do just as well and that would have all those same effects. But it's interesting to know. And if you've got allergy problems, Look at that live oak and think about that live oak next time before you plant one in your front yard and complain about the fact that you have allergies and that nothing, no grass will grow underneath that live oak and that the azaleas won't bloom and that the camellias won't bloom, because live oaks are gorillas in their own way and they can make life difficult. Love them over the streets. They're really nice. And I don't have allergy problems, so I guess I can... I can tolerate live oaks better than most people, but there it is, something to think about. So, yeah, that's interesting. So, you know, and Taxman, I don't know. Cherry laurels do produce a lot of pollen, and we're talking about trees that produce pollen. But one of the interesting things, and I with not all pollen causes allergies. The pollen that is most likely to cause allergies, let's talk about this, is pollen from plants that have to be moved by wind. They're not plants that move their pollen around by insects. If a plant has showy flowers, really showy flowers, then inevitably it's going to have very thick, heavy pollen that you can see, big pollen grains, because they have to be big enough for the insects to pick it up, right? But there's the problem. That pollen, when it gets to the edge of the flower, what does that pollen do? If it does get to the edge of the flower, which it's not going to do, it's going to fall down. It's going to fall straight down. It's going to fall on your feet. It's not going to fall up your nose, because things don't fall up. There it is. It's going to fall straight down. They don't cause allergy problems. The things that cause allergies are things that have flowers that aren't very conspicuous, that you don't really notice the flowers. Oak flowers. What does an oak flower look like? Well, it's a tassel. It's not very pretty at all. It's not. In fact, the female flowers you probably never even noticed at all. The male flowers are tassels. They have the pollen. So they're designed to blow that pollen around. So it's the plants that blow the pollen around that don't try to attract insects with pretty flowers. And cherry laurels, like most cherries, members of the cherry families, have flowers that are pollinated by insects, not by wind. So it doesn't matter. Like, pine trees produce a lot of pollen. In this case, it is wind-blown, but longleaf pollen is very thick and heavy, and it doesn't move far from the tree. And that has a lot to do with the way longleaf ecosystems work. Longleaf trees were dominant in the areas where they occurred, so they didn't need to move pollen long distances. So they didn't produce the kind of pollen that tends to float up your nose. It's the pollen that tends to drift a few feet and then drop down on other pines. It's also it also doesn't have the chemical signals that a lot of other pines have. So it doesn't get up your nose and then send out a little chemical signal that your nose reacts to. So even when you get it up your nose, yeah. Pecans, now I think, Taxman, I think you probably have a good case that pecans and other hickories probably do. They're mostly windborne, and they probably do have some serious issues with pollen. But yeah. All right. David, I'm sorting this thing out. I'll think about David's comments about hate crimes and pollen. We'll figure that out. Tony, listen. Tony sent me a picture of a Japanese magnolia. Since we got to talking about it, and he asked me what's growing in the center where the flowers were. That's easy. That's the fruit. Now, it may not mature, but it's the fruiting structure that forms after. That's the female part of the flower that remains after the stamens and petals have dropped. I don't know whether it was pollinated or not. I don't know whether it'll have viable seeds. It may not. But that's the fruiting structure. It's just a question of where it was, whether it was pollinated. And I don't see a lot of pollinated Japanese magnolias, but it can happen. It certainly can happen. And you might get some viable seeds there. It'll take a while. It would be impossible from just looking at the fruits and those leaves to tell you what kind of Japanese magnolia it is. I can sort of take a wild guess broadly, but it would be very hard. I need a little more information, but we'll do that. Hey, listen, let's come back. There's lots of things to talk about. We could talk about lawns. We can certainly talk about your pollen and your allergies. We can talk about your citrus. We can talk about things you need to plant. And we need to talk about pawpaws. I'm going to be right back to do that.
You can take all the tea in China, put it in a big brown bag for me, sail right round all the seven oceans, drop it straight into the deep blue sea. She's as sweet as Tupelo honey. She's an angel of the first degree. She's as sweet. She's as sweet as Tupelo honey. Just like honey, baby.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, so David Preston, I agree. It is a kind of a sexual assault. This allergy stuff. The trees right now. The grasses will be later. They're trying to pollinate each other, and if they're wind pollinated, listen, if they're wind pollinated, that pollen's going to travel a long distance in a lot of cases, and that's the pollen that gets up your nose, and particularly if it's a lightweight pollen that travels far. No. And live oaks are that way. Live oaks have a wind, they're wind carried pollen. Water oaks are the same way. Shoot, all oaks are the same way. They have wind-carried pollen. It moves long distances. And because that pollen, it's very fine. Oak pollen is very fine. So you actually have a hard time seeing clouds of it move like you do with some. You know, you've seen clouds of cedar pollen or clouds of pine pollen. It's very dramatic. You'll actually see the clouds of it because the pollen is very dense. It's very thick. It's very big. And that means it's probably less likely to get up your nose, too, because it's so big. But the fine oak pollen, you don't see it as well until it settles on something. And it comes from everywhere. And because it travels such a long distance, it has to have if we can use the word, evolved to have a chemical signal that it, when it gets to its rendezvous point, it says, it sends out a signal saying, "Are you an oak? Are you an oak? Can I get here and can we mate? Are you an oak tree?" And the female flower sends a signal back, says, "Yeah, go ahead." That's what happens with oak trees, but it doesn't happen with all trees as readily. So you don't get those chemical signals. But oak trees have to have them because the pollen travels so far. And then there's just a little bit of there it is. There's one way to think about it. Hey, we got a bunch of callers. Let's listen here.
David, go ahead.
Hey, Bill, how you doing this morning?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I am now in the planning stages of doing my patio area that I talked about earlier. Raise a patio area to level off and do a patio pavers and stuff.
Yeah.
At the same time, I'm going to redo my raised flower beds because I did them with landscape timbers last time, and the landscape timbers are already starting to rot out with a combination of the moisture, dogs, and maybe even termites.
Yeah.
I'm going to redo them with concrete blocks.
when I redo these raised flower beds in this patio area, do I have to worry about drainage? And how so, since I'm going to be doing them with cinder concrete blocks, what's the best way to do that if I have to worry about drainage?
Yes, you do have to worry about drainage very much. So, David, how high are you going to raise these raised beds?
They're all, the cinder blocks are going to be eight inches tall each, and I'm going to do a stack of two, so it'd be 16 inches. I mean, I'm not going to do the dirt's probably going to be about 12 inches.
Yeah. Keep the dirt, keep it under 12 inches. The more you disconnect the dirt from the surrounding soil, the more likely it is to be disconnected hydrologically. And I'm trying to find a normal way of saying that. the more the soil changes, the more there's a change in the soil type, and the more there's a change in elevation, the more likely it is you're likely to suffer from both excess water and excess drought. And one of the things that happens in a raised bed even is that they don't drain very well because there's a disc continuity between the soil in the beds and the soil underneath. So you want to be a little bit careful about that. I would say 12 inches is okay. That would be the maximum height I would recommend raising the bed above the surrounding soil. At 12 inches, if you've got good organic matter, you may not even need, I would suggest you really only need to go up one layer high, but if you want to go up two layers high, you could, because if the organic matter in the soil is good, which it needs to be to have a raised bed, the soil isn't going to move very easily. But, okay, so you're okay. The drainage, yeah, is the bed between the house and the patio?
It's up again. What it's going to be is it's going to be up either up against the house or it's going to be up against the wall that's going to be the patio. Because I'm going to do the blocks three high for the patio to level off that area, and I'm going to put dirt and then gravel on.
I see. So then you're going to put. So how wide is this bed going to be?
It's probably going to be 16 inches wide. So.
Ew, not very wide. That's pretty narrow. You know, you're going to have big problems.
Don't tell me that, Bill. You're going to rain on my parade.
Yeah, so can you make it wider? Can you make that bed wider?
I could. I haven't made the bed yet, so I can certainly
plan for that. Why don't you make it wider? Why don't we do it wider? I think you'll have fewer problems. Let's make it at least 24 inches wide.
Okay.
Okay? And that's clear space, not to the front of the brick, but 24 inches wide, clear space. And then when you go to do the soil, crack the soil underneath it, crack it a little bit, no need to stir it up, just crack it, and then come back with a mix that's predominantly pine bark, and a little bit of something else. If you can use the native soil, that's even better. And just leave that pine bark on the top. We're gonna hope that there's enough soil creatures that they'll begin to meld those two types of soil together, so that your drainage remains pretty good and that the drainage occurs underground. Now, if your footing is very deep, how deep is your footing gonna be?
What do you mean by footing,
David? We got a lot to talk about here, so. You're not going to use a footing underneath a double stack wall. A footing is a concrete pad that the center blocks sit on.
If I can get away with it, I was not going to use a footing, but if I couldn't, then I obviously was going to.
Yeah, are you going to dry stack them or are you going to mortar them?
I'm going to mortar them together, yeah.
Yeah. Well, traditionally, you would put a footing underneath something like that. It would probably be good to pour a narrow footing. If it's a deep footing, you will have drainage problems. If you don't have any footing at all, the uh, the center blocks are probably going to shift very readily, and they're going to crack. The mortar between them will crack, and you're going to have a little bit of a problem. Well, David, you've raised so many good and interesting issues here. I would definitely leave drainage. I would definitely allow drainage to come through. Leave some holes for drainage, particularly if there's whether there's a footing or not, to make sure that water escapes very well. And give it a try. And I'm going to run out of time to talk about all these things because you've just all these questions. I think I need to warn you about and. I hope I haven't messed your Sunday morning up, David.
Not yet. Still an hour to go.
Okay. Hey, listen. So I have to take this hard break. We're going to come back. I'm going to think about how you build this thing, and let me come back and talk about it after in the next hour. All okay. Right. All right.
All right.
Will respond to you. Some people don't go for prunes. I don't know.